never disappoint. So many of you might not realize this, but the view from up here is pretty awesome. You really ought to try it some Sunday morning when the room is filled with your lovely faces. Honestly, I can be as grumpy and uninspired as anyone all week long, right up until the moment I step up here. And I get to see this way over yonder, right? It's a double rainbow, the top of the Rocky Mountain and a Grand Canyon view all rolled into one. This vision, what we see with our own eyes and what we see with our mind's eye, our imagination, really does affect how we feel about every day. The search for what is beautiful to each of us really matters. While sight uses one of our senses, I think vision is that larger sense that can be found through any of our senses. Beethoven continued to compose symphonies even after he lost all of his hearing. That was vision. Monet lost much of his eyesight but discovered new vision and meaning in the experience. So let's not take the narrow view of vision. When our imagination and creativity are engaged, the impossible transforms into the possible. When we lose our ability to see beauty or to imagine a world imbued with more dignity and hope, well, that matters too. Visions that are too narrow, turning us backward, clinging to a past that is gone, a past that's gone instead of facing forward, they will choke the life out of us. I'm not saying we should ignore history or the wisdom, beauty, and hard lessons handed down from the past. These are important points of information on a long journey. They inform us, and when they are inspirational, they can help shine a light on a new vision for today. But they should not stop the vision of what is possible for tomorrow. Think of Thomas Potter having a vision of God's love so strong that he built a house for it. Now, building anything, a house, a shed, a chapel, takes time and skill. He or someone who worked for him cut the trees and milled the logs into boards. He or someone who worked for him forged nails by hand and heated silica until it melted to pour sheets of glass for windows. In his day, every board was hand-sawn, every nail hand-hammered, every fire hand-stoked. It must have taken months, if not years, to complete his project. Balancing his imagination of a home for universal salvation, that loving the hell out of this world, with the very practical need to run a farm, a business, a household, and raise a family day after day. The history tells us that he was illiterate and allowed people of all faiths to worship on his land. Given the time he lived on, I wonder if people of color and women were treated with the same dignity as white men. Were indigenous people welcome on the land that once was their home? In that colonial era, were slaves or indentured servants pressed to work for him? I don't know. I don't know if Carol knows. We do know that the Universalist Church he helped found with John Murray was a reflection of its time and all the inherent biases assumed as normal in that colonial age of slavery and disenfranchise of so many. The Universalist vision was bold and inclusive. All were saved by God's love, they preached. But I don't know what they practiced. It was, I imagine, more of a mix with the vantage of hindsight. The vision of Thomas Potter is bold and inclusive as it was, had to have been limited, because vision always is. We can only see so far. But this we know, a group of people were encouraged and enlivened by a faith in the goodness that is possible, rather than the fear of eternal damnation. And so today, you and I can only see so far. Telescopes and microscopes and corrective glasses help us know a little more, but other lenses are at work too. It is the unacknowledged biases which privilege and ignorance lend to our vision that create the limitations I'm talking about here. They trip us up and put a lie on what has been perceived as truth. Sometimes, what is true for me as a white woman with education and opportunity far greater than my ancestors is simply not possible for others in today's America. The fact that my German immigrant parents could assimilate into this culture and gain citizenship in a few years, even after fighting for the enemy in World War II, is all about a lens, a system that privileges white identity over other races and cultures. That lens of white supremacy is alive and active and sometimes quite obvious in our denial of status to immigrants and refugees with the wrong skin color today. It lives in the exploding prison system that invests in locking people up rather than helping them out. It lives in the deeply unequal education we offer our children. If we are to build a wall around our country, as some would like, it is to keep in whiteness, white skin, white culture, and all its attendant wealth and privilege. That's only one lens. The lens of male privilege is very evident in the discussion of sexual harassment, the Me Too movement, and whatever is happening in the latest Supreme Court nomination process. This week, I watched a clip of Anita Hill's testimony back in 1991. Back then, our understanding of sexual harassment and the damage it can do to us was still somewhat limited. In that video clip, it was obvious in the demeanor and questions of the men in charge that they were ignorant, totally ignorant of the most common experiences of most women. Their vision was decidedly limited. I suppose we'll see soon if anything really changed in the halls of power of privilege and privilege since then. Another lens that has changed our vision dramatically is the one that helps us to see and identify gender and sexual orientation. There is such a change in perspective from generation to generation, the one that's now well into retirement compared to the one just emerging into young adulthood. In a recent conversation here about preparing a survey, I learned that things have really changed in 50 to 60 years. Questions about our orientation and gender identity are judged far too personal by the elder group. Yet if we did not ask such questions of the youngest group, they would be insulted and feel excluded. We have learned that no longer should we expect heteronormativity, that all couples consist of male and female, or gender congruence, that gender identity conforms with the physical attributes we are born with. Just another lens that's come to us. These new lenses that have emerged into the American consciousness within these past 50 to 60 years have shaken many people up. It should not be surprising that some refuse the correction. They reject that information that improved vision can offer. It's too new, too troubling, too frightening. Maybe that information destroys what they know and trust too much and challenges their own identity. The thing is, refusing these lenses has far greater consequences than Bonnet's purely personal decision to not undergo cataract surgery. Most of the time, we can stay open to it. It is exciting to see one another in a new way. The new lens brings us closer to some essential truth about ourselves. We come out again with a new sense of identity and a deeper truth that is more beautiful than anything we have seen before. Seeing the bigger picture allows for real change to happen. Seeing the systems and institutions that uphold oppression, even when we personally abhor racism, sexism, and heterosexism, allows for the possibility of their undoing. That makes it worth trying to see through these new lenses. Thomas Potter's vision, while certainly limited, still holds some wonderful and, I hope, eternal truth. That God or the universe or whatever means most to you will not give up on us, will not give up on our struggles, that enduring and expanding love is for all. Love is for all, no exceptions. Dignity and worth are meant for all. How we create that for today and for the future is our unfinished task to envision. Do not assume that, oh, other new, as yet to be identified lenses are yet to emerge. I'm sure about this. There is about so much about human experience and the world we inhabit that is yet to be named and fully understood. It's always one step, one day at a time. We both accept our limitations and look to what is better, what is possible, more deeply expressive of our love and our humanity than we can see yet today. The other side of that magical meeting of the hope and vision of Thomas Potter was the despair embodied in the character of Reverend John Murray. He was a minister excommunicated in England for his radical universalist beliefs. Bereaved by the deaths of his wife and children, he came to America essentially to lose himself. Instead, he received a radical welcome, a fresh start to sharing his good news. That meeting certainly turned his life around. A shared vision will help us, may help us, find ourselves too. I can imagine how powerfully moving it must have felt to journey as far from home as one could imagine, to travel for weeks by ship to an unknown port and then find a kindred spirit there, to listen with an open heart and mind and to be heard into being is what human community makes possible. It is just this which brings us into the presence of what is holy and whole. A meeting filled with vision is a wholesome place for a human heart to land. And every single one of us deserves such a meeting. No matter that our vision is limited and incomplete, we have to keep recreating that vision of a world of more justice and kindness, far less cruelty and greed if it is ever to be born. Imagination and vision that excites us and draws us forward into the future we want to create for our children and their children might be the message of Potter and Murray and Beethoven and even Carol King leave in their wake. We listen and remember them. Not so as to build shrines and make idols worshiping the past, but to ride upon the hope they engendered, still holding out hope, lots of it, for a better future for all here and now and all who are yet to be born. Just a few small excerpts from a poem by Maya Angelou to close with. It's called A Brave and Startling Truth. We, this people on a small and lonely planet, traveling through casual space, past aloof stars, across the way of indifferent suns, to a destination where all signs tell us it is possible and imperative that we learn a brave and startling truth. The truth is, when we come to it, we, this people on this minuscule and kithless globe, who reach daily for the bomb, the blade, and the dagger, yet who petition in the dark for tokens of peace, we, this people on this mote of matter in whose mouths abide cankerous words, which challenge our very existence, yet out of those same mouths come songs of such exquisite sweetness that the heart falters in its labor and the body is quieted with awe. We, this people, on this small and drifting planet whose hands can strike with such abandon, that in a twinkling life is sapped from the living. Yet those same hands can touch with such healing, irresistible tenderness, that the haughty neck is happy to bow and the proud back is glad to bend. Out of such chaos, of such contradiction, we learn that we are neither devils nor divines. When we come to it, we, this people, on this wayward floating body created on this earth, of this earth, have the power to fashion for this earth a climate where every person can live freely, without sanctimonious piety, without crippling fear. When we come to it, we must confess that we are the possible. We are the miraculous, the true wonder of this world. That is when and only when we come to it. So may we come to such a clear and unwavering vision in this meeting and all the meetings yet to come.